I'm good. I'm here. Don't
worry.
So,
Jamie, have you done any more catching up on season one?
Oh, no. No, I haven't watched any of season one yet.
You're not even curious, huh?
I'm totally curious. I just have no freaking time.
Yeah, I know the feeling. Well, Jamie, this is the West Coast Project podcast for True Detective, and Michelle's still on vacation, so thank you for filling in again.
I'm so happy to be here, Mike. I miss talking to you. We've talked about that because our shows are on hiatus, and so this is great.
I actually like this show, this episode, a little bit better than some of the other ones.
I agree.
I thought the male-female dialogue was really pretty good. Frank and Jordan's talks were good, and Ray and Annie had some good conversation.
Yeah, I loved them too. And even, what's the other guy's name, Paul?
Yeah, Paul Woodrow.
Yeah, Paul with his mother was, it was not pleasant, but it was really good dialogue.
And his mother-in-law, to be.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
So, yeah, so that was all cool. I still have my share of gripes about it, so don't worry. I'll have those, too. So it starts, this episode starts with the aftermath of the shooting. It's like 66 days later.
Right. I have to say, I loved the fact that they went right back into it as soon as we got, you know, as soon as the show started.
Yeah, they didn't do much of a transition, did they, from the right back into it to the 66th day later, right? It was just like Vince watching the news on television.
Right. And I liked it like that because, you know, it seemed jarring, which is, I think maybe that was intentional so that we'll be like, oh, crap, you know, like 2 months have gone by. What's going on? Like, what's happened?
Yeah, it was jarring. It was like, oh, wait, what? How much time? Is this like the next day? 60 days? What's going on? And took some time adjustment as a viewer.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
So on the news, Vince finds out, or Frank, I should start calling him Frank, I guess, that the Attorney General Geldof is running for governor.
Right.
And he's calling Vincey a corrupt place. Casper was a corrupt guy. What was that look, Jamie, on Frank's face when he heard this? It was kind of he was contemplating something.
Right, he looked interested. I don't know what he was thinking, but yeah, I thought so too. His face was kind of cryptic.
Do you think he knew then everything that he knows eventually that comes up in this episode? Or he kind of tweaks his plan?
I don't know. I didn't think about that when I saw him make that face, and so I don't know.
They made a point of his face being like a part of that scene, though.
Yeah, for sure.
So he kind of gets ready for his day, and he watches Jordan sleep, and then she kind of senses that he's watching him but doesn't let him know
right.
that she knows he's watching. That was kind of weird.
I actually really liked it, though, because it was almost like a horror movie for a second.
Yeah, her eyes kind of open up like,
yeah,
like for no reason, just a sense. She right. sensed he was there.
They flick to the right, like she knows he's there. I liked it. It was really cool.
So he gets into the car with this driver. Now, every bit of news he's hearing, from the scene in his kitchen to the radio in the car, is about his capers. He's related to every piece of news that he hears. And so he kind of drives off. And then we see that Ray's working at the Vincey Gardens Casino. He's working for Frank now.
Right.
And this Roger Moore, this is the Roger Moore guy, right?
Roger Moore guy.
Yeah, he was the guy that Frank or somebody was calling him Roger Moore.
Oh, okay. I'm not sure because I don't remember that. When you referred to it last time, I wasn't really super sure what it was. So I'm not sure. But I have to say, I really, like, it was cool to see that Ray had just changed. And I guess he's the muscle now. Like when he said last time he wasn't muscle, I guess he is muscle.
Yeah. Do you know this guy's name? His name in the show?
What do you mean, Ray?
No, the other guy, the Roger Moore guy.
The Roger Moore guy? No.
Johnny Unflappable.
Yeah, but I don't remember his face. Like, even this time I watched, and I don't remember the guy.
I think it's Johnny Unflappable, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
Frank and his wife grilled him in the last episode, and they kind of walked out of the casino. And he walked out, and his wife, and Jordan said, "I don't trust that guy." I think it's the same guy. I might be wrong, but I can't make that connection. I don't know his name in the show.
Okay, yeah, I don't know his name either.
So I'll just call him Roger Moore, or Johnny Unflappable.
Okay.
Until he's replaced by the real Johnny Unflappable.
Okay.
So that guy is giving... Okay, so first of all, how did he get into Ray's house?
I don't know.
Ray looks surprised that he's in there. Like, hey, what are you doing here? How did he get in there?
I don't know. It's really kind
of
weird.
He doesn't get so surprised that you think, like, Ray, come on. You can't just accept that this dude's in your house.
Right.
Mr. Anger Management Problem Guy. Like, jump all over this guy.
Yeah, Mr. I Kill People. I don't know.
He's looking through his drawers and looking through his shit. And Ray just comes in, hey, what are you doing here? I didn't get that. So snooping around and kind of reminds Ray, you didn't have to quit. I told you that. The AG was going to drop all the charges that might have come in against you.
Oh, that dude. Okay. All right. So here's the story. That guy is a representative, I think, of the police. Like, he's some sort of government dude. And the reason why Ray didn't react when he was in his apartment is because that his apartment is owned by the police.
Yeah, but you can't just walk into it.
Well, apparently you can.
You rent an apartment. It's owned by somebody else that you rent it from. They don't just walk in when... I don't know. Well, it's like the frat house of the police?
Yes, basically.
All right.
Yeah.
What's that guy's name, though? Do you know who I'm talking about?
I know who you're talking about, but I don't know his name.
Is that the Johnny Unflappable Roger Moore from the other episode?
I think so.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right, so Ray says when the state comes in, you better walk before they make you run. Kind of makes it a smarmy remark why he left. And Ray asks him if that means that Johnny Unflappable, or the AG, I guess, thinks that the blame is all on the Mexicans for killing Casper.
Mm-hmm.
This tells me, as a viewer, Jamie, that the Mexicans probably did not kill him.
Right.
So we still don't really know what's... There's a missing element in this puzzle still that we don't know about.
I agree, and I think it's just going to take time to unfold. I think that's a little morsel of the mystery that's there.
Yeah, so he makes a comment about Ray's new Walter White Charger and then throws him out of that city house. He has, 2 months before he has to leave?
Yep.
The row house. So I didn't know cities did that. They rent places for cops to live in.
Yeah, I didn't know either.
Vinci does that, or
I don't know. I don't know, but it's interesting.
So Ray goes off and he's working for Vince / Frank. Now he collects rent at the slum apartments, and the first woman he comes up to doesn't have all the money for her rent. She's a little short, but he sees beer on the table, so he's like, if you got money for beer, you got money for rent.
That's right.
Poor lady, it's like she's not buying the beer. It's her slacker husband, probably. He's not even there to take the brunt of the collection dude being there.
Right. So tell me what he said. Did you hear what he said to her? Because it sounded to me like he said something about put you in intensive care or something like that.
No, ICE, like in immigration.
Oh, because I thought he said ICU.
Yeah, he might have said ICE. It might have sounded like intensive care.
All right.
Yeah, I'll get you on immigration charges if you don't pay up.
Okay, all right. That makes more sense.
But he's really discouraged by the state of everybody living in these slum apartments.
Yeah, so it's extremely depressing, like the rest of this show. But, you know, when you're enforcing for a place like that, that's a slum, it's got to weigh on you because, those people are poor and you have to go and threaten them and,
So we see Annie we get a little comedic relief here with Annie in the harassment group. Right. She's got these boys wrapped around her finger, mostly the leader of the session.
Right.
And these guys are just dopes, Jamie. They truly belong in this treatment. Like, yeah, tell us about it. Tell us about what happened, how you harassed this guy. Like, they just want to get off by listening to her.
Yeah, it's
but
just
so nobody, not any one of them, including the leader, is any match for Annie's intellect. She's just smarter by degrees than any and all of them.
That's right.
She's just leading them around. That was pretty funny.
It was really funny.
So we jump over to Woodrow now, Paul. Paul's getting through this lawsuit with this horrible actress, Miss Lindell. She's a piece of shit, Jamie. I do not like her.
Yeah, I don't like her either.
I also thought this was kind of dumb writing for this episode because they're in this, I'm innocent, I am not guilty. And you'd think they would have already been way past all this. Like, why would he be saying this now?
Right. Yeah, I don't know. It's a weird kind of setup. It just feels strange. Almost like I don't care what happens to that part of the story.
Yeah, I think they would have already hashed all this out, but they rehash it all for us as the audience. And we find out that her publicist smeared Woodrow in the tabloids, but if she gets her way, she's going to drop everything. It was like, well, the woman, who's the black woman cop who's really cool? That's kind of the...
Yeah. I don't know her name.
I don't know anybody's name here. I'm so sorry, but she's cool. And she's like, so you smeared his name through the tabloids and now you're just going to drop it? His name's still smeared.
Right.
She's right.
Yeah, I mean, she is. And I actually like her. She's cool. I'm looking her up right now to see who she is.
All right. So the smarmy lawyer for... Actress Lindell tells Woodrow, well, there's still a chance we could do a civil case. Like, he's threatening him. So, Jamie, Woodrow has little to lose, and I could see some sweet retribution coming down later for this lawyer and this actress by Woodrow.
Yeah.
That would be so nice to see.
Yes, it would.
So we jump over to Vince at his old club. And he says, now, Pizzolatto is going a little crazy here. He says to the waiter or to the bartender, whose name is Lloyd, start me a tabloid.
Like, yeah.
Tabloid.
Oh, God.
Are you supposed to hear it that way, or is that just a coincidence?
I think it was a coincidence, but it's kind of a fun play on words.
But because right after the scene where Paul got smeared in the tabloids, I don't know. It doesn't make much sense to connect those two scenes, but the bartender could have been Bill or Charlie or anything, but he's Lloyd.
Yeah.
So the Mexicans come in to take ownership, but no, this deal with Santos didn't really hold up because Santos is gone now. And this Mexican head guy that comes in, Gonzalez, said he had an arrangement with Santos. And Frank just says, I don't need partners. Santos is gone. And dismisses everybody, including the Cisco kid.
Yep.
That was kind of funny.
Yeah.
You too, Cisco. We don't need you anymore.
Right, exactly. I liked it. It was so, like, disrespectful.
Like, 5'2", tough guy. With right. with a dandy Cisco kid outfit. That was funny.
With the shades. Get the shades.
There were a lot of funny little scenes in here. Like, Frank goes and wakes up the stumblebum mayor. He was taking a micro nap.
Right.
And even Michelangelo took micro naps.
Yeah. That was crazy.
We do learn some important info here, though, Jamie. We find out that and I don't know if you've figured this out already, but I didn't know this yet. I've kind of figured this out right now, that this waste company had sprinkled the poison all over the land. That's why those fields that we saw in the other episode had all those metals and cadmium and all the poisonous metals in them.
Okay.
They're purposely sprinkled in there. It weren't really mine filings. They were from the waste company doing it on purpose. They ruined all those lush fields, and that drove the price down, and that's why they were able to buy them up. That's why the group, the Catalyst group, was able to buy them up for so cheap.
Oh, gosh. I missed that. I actually missed that part.
And then we find out that the guy who owned the waste company got killed in a drunken driving crash off a cliff. So they eliminated that guy.
Right.
That guy was not a drinker, and here he is getting drunk and driving off a cliff. So they had the waste company poison all this land, drive the price down. They bought it super cheap. Then they eliminated the evidence by somehow they made that guy drive off the cliff. And then Mayor takes a drink after he tells him this little story. Right. This Mayor guy is like, Chisani is just like a cartoon character almost.
Yeah, it's true.
So Frank wants to know who's looking at his poker room. And the mayor just says, it's foreign interest. I can't tell you any more than that. Then there was a couple confusing lines between Frank and the mayor about your boy hasn't moved to Oakland. Was that, did that mean his son or did that mean some boy, like some guy working for him?
Yeah, I think that means somebody that was working for him.
Because in a minute he talks about his son.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's his son that's moved to Oakland because there was no reference to that at all.
Right.
And then his, you know, his ex is still like in the city, so.
Yeah, and they're way, you know, they're 500 miles from Oakland. They're in L.A.
Right.
Anyway, so the mayor reveals that he knows Frank's been running prostitution in this poker room without telling him or letting him in on it. And he's going to charge him five extra a month. Tells him to get the hell out. So do you think that was 5% or 5,000 or does it even matter?
I think it's 5,000 and it doesn't matter, but it's good to, you know, to think about, like, I don't think it's 500 and I don't think it's 5%.
Oh, it's definitely not 500. They don't do anything in the hundreds in this show.
Yeah.
All right. So we go to Ray at his custody hearing and this is not good, Jamie.
Oh,
he's
God.
Fighting so uphill on this mess with this poor kid, Chad.
It is. And he's fighting uphill. And I don't get it. I don't get why she's doing this. I mean, I don't know. If it were me and I had a situation like that, I mean, he's not that bad that she needs to do everything that she's doing.
Oh, he's pretty bad.
Right?
I would do everything she's doing.
Well, I don't know what I've missed or if I'm just prejudiced because it's Colin Farrell, but I don't know. I mean, he loves his son.
Yeah, but he's also very bad for this kid. He's calling him a little fucking pussy in front of all the kids on the schoolyard.
Oh.
And he's just bad for this kid. He's a drunken, violent dude.
Oh, gosh. I don't remember that scene that he did that, because I remember this scene where his son was in the car with him and they were in front of the school and there were all these kids picking and like he was, you know, he didn't want to get out of the car and his dad gave him courage and told him to go.
Yeah, because he's terrified. Somebody stole the kid's shoes that Ray gave to him and he's like, somebody stole your shoes, tell me who did it, you little fucking pussy. And that's when he went and beat up that kid's dad.
Okay.
Like brass knuckled that kid's dad. Okay. I mean, his kid's gonna find. Chad's gonna find out about that. Chad had to know eventually that happened.
Yeah.
Ray's not a good guy to have in Chad's life. I don't blame the mom at all.
All right.
But there's no love lost in this room. He does agree to take the drug, and he has to take the biological father's test, I guess.
Yeah. Oh gosh, it's so awful, and yeah, now he's got to do it.
And so his lawyer tells him if this little party's going to keep going on, he's going to need more cash. So,
yeah.
Of course, things just ramp up to more and more pressure on old Ray.
Yeah.
So Frank and Ray have a meeting next, and they talk about how they both need more money. And Frank wants Ray to investigate the waste company guy's death.
Right.
Until Blake. Who's Blake?
I don't know Blake.
Well, while you're Googling the other guy that we don't know, can you Google Blake?
Okay. Yeah, I can't find anything about that lady cop, but let me see.
Well, everybody knows who we're talking about. She's like the upstanding, honest, let's do things right cop that everybody kind of loves.
Yep.
So while you're looking at that, I noticed that Frank in his office had the killer dice clock. Did you notice that? He had a clock with dice as the numbers.
No.
In his casino office, a very Vegas-y looking cheesy clock. I was impressed by it.
What the heck? I missed like everything.
So Frank's going to get Ray some more work, and that includes following this guy Blake around.
Okay, so it's Blake Churchman, and I'll tell you who. Oh, he looks like a really kind of scummy guy. He's got red hair. and blue eyes and a goatee. He looks kind of Irish or Scottish, maybe.
Picture this guy. Anyway, he's important because they want him to follow him. But all right, so now we go to Paul and his trailer queen mom.
Yeah.
Tells her he's getting married to Emily, and his mom just says, "Oh my God!" and takes a drink. Calls him stupid. It's just bad news, man. Bad news.
They have a horrible relationship.
So on her wall, Jamie, she has this old beauty queen model picture of herself right in her kitchen.
Right, and then she says later that she used to be a dancer.
Yeah, she's like an old showgirl.
Yeah, and then she's, you know, like she's mad at him because she gave up her dance life in order to carry him. That's what that whole BS was about, all that stuff that she was saying. And, you know, I don't know if I'm soft-hearted, but it's not my opinion that you should make your child be grateful for the fact that you had them.
No, you don't make them know that you ruined my career because I had to be pregnant with you, you little bastard.
Right.
Then she taunts him about his boys.
Right. Oh, God. It's so awful.
She knows all the buttons for sure.
Right. I mean, God, why would you say that? That's no love. I mean, but, you know, actually, a few episodes ago when he was sitting with her and he called her mom and she's like, it's too late for that. And, you know, don't call me mom. And she was talking about him being good looking and stuff. I really kind of thought she might just try something with him because she's so skeezy.
Yeah, she's also burned her way through his 20 grand that he got from Afghanistan.
Oh, God, yeah.
So Paul was corrupt. He did get money out of it somehow, probably not. Do you think it was his salary, or do you think he got it somehow out of Afghanistan?
Well, okay, so I don't know. I would have to guess that it was corrupt, like a corrupt grab. But I can tell you that during the Iraq War, when soldiers were in Iraq and also contractors, like people who were there from like the Blackwater Group and stuff, when they would go to raid these places, they would take their booty, like whatever they could get, they would take it. And a lot of times in Iraq, they would find hundreds of thousands of dollars of money, and they would split it. And there were some corruption investigations into that stuff back during that time. So it would not be a far-fetched idea to think that he got money illegally while he was in Afghanistan.
Yeah, I get email from those guys every day. Help me get my money out of Iraq. I'll give you 8 million of the 20 million.
Not Nigeria.
No, it's Iraq now and Afghanistan.
Oh, you're serious.
So, Jamie, I want to see Polly go Aria insane. I want him to have a death prayer and then take them all out, accelerated, though, like in one day. Take out Miss Lindell, Miss Lindell's lawyer, his mama, maybe his fiance's mama, and a few other people who probably we'll get to meet. I just want to see him go insane because he's sunken so low and he's so... He, you know, he has the capability. He has the tough guy skills to do this, and he's justified. I just want to see that happen.
He's not justified in killing everybody.
I think he is, just like Arya is.
All right, so his fiance's mom, she's like innocent. Why would he kill her?
She wants to take his motorcycle away and put him in a suit. She's at the top of the list.
All she did was comment that he wasn't on a motorcycle anymore and he wears a suit. She's happy for him.
Oh, it's so good that you're not on the motorcycle that you love the most in the world. And I'm glad you have to wear a nice suit. And I will move in on your couch. That doesn't put her at the top of the list. I don't know what does.
Oh, God.
All right. Annie goes to meet the girl whose sister, Vera, is missing now.
Yeah.
And she's connected to this Guerneville party that she worked at. The pictures, I guess, with the guys from this party and the – I started to call them sapphires, but they're the diamonds. But they look blue. Didn't they look blue or purple on your TV to you?
Yeah, and diamonds can be all kinds of colors, you know. You get chocolate diamonds that are brown. They don't look very pretty, but people buy them. They like them. People like those. And, you know, like canary diamonds, they're yellow and so on. They're blue diamonds.
So I guess the story here, we learned some stuff here, too, that this girl and these prostitutes are connected to all these rich dudes, which eventually are being used against the rich dudes to blackmail them. Like, we put all these prostitutes around these rich guys at this super highfalutin party. We can blackmail them later. I kind of got that out of this, too.
Yeah.
And then so boyfriend number two comes to visit Annie in the locker. She's working in the basement now in the evidence locker. Mm-hmm. And Annie asks him to help her to find the address up north for where Vera was for this escorted party.
Right.
And it looks like he's going to help her. He's actually going to do it.
Yep.
So this guy is a good dude.
He's
and plus, how can you resist yourself around, what's her name?
Annie.
Rachel. Yeah, Rachel McAdams.
Okay, so I think that she's pretty cool, and I think that she could probably get any one of those guys to do anything for her. It's a combination of her being cute and of her being like kind of really like she doesn't care about anything.
Yeah, aloof. Yeah, for sure.
It kind of makes her kind of cool.
Right. Cute, tough, and aloof. What else could you want, a girl?
Right.
So Ray's following this dude Blake now. I still don't know. Maybe that's Roger Moore, Mr. Anonymous.
Oh, I don't know.
I think it's this guy. I think it's that tall, thin guy that we saw at the beginning. But now Ray's using that recorder, but not to talk to Chad. He's just talking to himself and recording it. Loyalty and pain. There's no limits to either. Pretty funny. Pretty telling. He's got some depth that he can sink lower to, I think, too. So him and Paul are both like, we haven't seen their bottom yet, how low they can sink.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
And it looks like that this guy he's following, Blake, goes to the Dr. Rick Springfield house.
Yeah.
And that where they are shopping for prostitutes, Jamie. It's like they're picking out meat at the supermarket.
Ugh.
They pick up some girls and bring them into town to this Osip, this Russian dude. And Osa promptly checks their ears, like looked in that girl's ear. Did you notice that? Let me check you out. He looks like makes her turn her head and looks at her ear.
Like a dog.
Yeah, that was weird.
I don't know.
All right, so let's go to the club. Frank's at the club, and Jordan comes in with the books and kind of walks around. And she and Frank talk. This is the conversation at the beginning that I mentioned I liked.
Yeah.
The beginning of the podcast.
I liked it so much.
She knows all this bullshit's happening at the club.
Yep.
She doesn't want a gangster husband.
That's right.
She doesn't cut any shit out either. She's like, you're a pimp and a dealer now, Frank. Let's admit it. But I like how Frank or Pizzolatto put Frank's words in his mouth or how Frank said them, whatever, however you want to look at it. But he says, you may love me and be with me or love me and not be with me. Let's just stop walking on eggshells.
All right. Cool. And this is why, Mike, this is why I told you I love Vince Vaughn in this role, because the dialogue, I mean, the things that they write for this dude to say, he's got the best lines in the show. And the stuff that he says is so philosophical and kind of existential, but it's got like this twist. It's got like this knife twist sharpness to it that the stuff he says is so true and it's so honest. And it's wild to me because, you know, he's such an unsavory character and his life is so dirty, but everything he says is true.
Well, I like the words that Pizzolatto put in Frank's mouth. I do not like the ones he put in Ray's mouth that we're going to hear pretty soon. I mean,
okay.
They were almost comical when he has Ray speak his lines. But
okay, so but before we go on to the next scene, I wanted to tell you some more about that. Like the conversation between Frank and Jordan, I think it's amazing. And I really think now that they write it the way that they write it, so that I think they do that on purpose. I think they make that like the honesty between them is a huge part of their closeness, of their relationship. And we're supposed to pick up on that, and we're supposed to see them as different from the other couples.
Yeah, they're pretty honest. She admits some new stuff to Frank that he didn't even know, that she had 3 abortions, and that's why she's having these problems getting pregnant.
Okay. Is
three
that...
operations? I think that means 3 abortions.
Okay. All right. So I wondered about that because I thought she meant that she had 3 operations to try to fix herself so that she could.
No, I think because she says, like, when I was a teenager, like when I was in my 20s or something, it was like in the past. Okay. I think that means abortions. Okay. You're the girl. You should know this, dude. Why am I?
Because I thought that's what she said. You know my thing. You know I only see the good side. I don't see the bad side.
Well, Frank says, why are you telling me now? Why not tell me when I was on top of the world? Why do you tell me when I'm low? Yeah. And you're right. They are honest because Jordan says, well, I'm me and you're you and we're both vulnerable. So we're both – all the cards are on the table now. We've both got everything honest and open.
Yep.
And we'll come back to this scene really soon, but they jump to Paul now. Now, Paul has to power down some fueled-up iced tea to make it through this dinner with his mother-in-law. He pours, vodka or gin or something into his iced tea? Pretty sneakily, too. That makes it look like he's just having iced tea. But the mom-in-law has invited herself to live with them. And thank God they got you off that motorcycle and make you wear a nice suit now. He's going to strangle her, Jamie. He's going to murder her in her sleep on the couch. And she's like, I'm tough. I sat in a boat for 8 days, so she must be Cuban.
Right.
I sat in a boat for 8 days. I don't mind sleeping on your couch for 8 months, 8 years.
Right.
So we go back to Jordan and Frank, and now there's some more cool stuff. She compares his childhood to the one they were planning to conceive or adopt, and he tries to brush it away with, like, I don't have bandwidth for this now, but she really pushes it and gets him to realize that she is really behind him. She's really on his side.
Right. Oh, that was so insightful. I really loved it because what she said was, remember last podcast we were talking about it and I told you what he said because you were talking about that scene and I said he didn't want someone else's problem. And she brought that up to him this time and she was like, yeah, that's what you said. And I think the reason why is because that's how you thought of yourself as a child. And it was so insightful and she actually managed to break through his wall.
Oh, yeah, that's good. That was good insightfulness by you to catch that. Maybe that's why I didn't catch it then. Yeah, he didn't want to see a little version of Frankie running around the house, huh?
Yep.
She's really a good partner and hot as a red-headed firecracker, too. Jordan, I love that girl. So they agree to make time for each other later, too, which is pretty cool.
Well, okay, so no, that's not what happened. She said, I'm going home. Maybe you should come home and spend some time. And then he did it. And I love that because that's just, it's one of those things. It's a woman thing. Like if your guy is not doing what he's supposed to do and you tell him maybe you should do it and you don't put like the heavy hand on it and you don't yell at him or get mad. If you just make a suggestion and then he does it, it's like, it's a treat because it feels like not only does he care, but he listens and he respects you enough to do what you suggested. It was awesome.
Maybe I'm wrong in calling that an agreement, but that's kind of how I saw it, that he heard her and he agreed to her idea.
Yeah.
He didn't say, yes, okay, I'm in. I agree to this statement that you just made. He just does it. Yeah, he just does it. He listens to her.
Yeah.
You're right. All right, so let's go to this drone room with the girl, the singer. Who's the girl singer? Can you Google her? Do you know her? She's
Yeah, okay, so hold on.
Annie and Ray are talking in the drone room, and they talk about the evidence of the girl, Vera, at Casper's party. And I like how Annie and Ray, they show more evidence of being close to each other. They're going to be on top of each other in the next 2 or 3 episodes, I guarantee it.
I don't think so.
No?
Nah, I don't think so.
They got to be aloof to each other to keep this hot connection going.
Okay, so... The way that it felt like to me is like that there's nothing between them. Like before, it kind of felt like there was a chemistry, but for this episode, it kind of felt like that that there was nothing. I mean, like, almost like they were, there was never, there would never be any hope for them. It just kind of felt like that.
I don't know. I saw as much honesty between them as I saw between Jordan and Frank.
Oh, yeah, for sure, honesty. But, like, it didn't feel like they were interested. It just felt kind of like two souls, like two people just really, you know, connecting. And you can see that they really have something in common and they really get along. But it doesn't, it didn't feel to me like in this scene, like how it felt in the last episode.
I don't know. I see it progressing. So I see it getting more connected. But I don't know. Could be wrong.
I don't know.
But they talk about the girl, Vera, and then they talk about each other, and she talks about her hands are shaking from drinking. We saw her hands shaking down in that evidence room.
Yeah.
And he talks, he tells her he talks to himself. So they are being pretty honest with each other.
Right.
And they talk about the diamonds missing from Casper's safe deposit box, those blue diamonds.
Uh-huh.
And that these escorts are being used to trap the powerful men in the compromising positions. So I think we're starting to see the game. We don't just don't know who the ringmaster of the game is running everything.
That's right. And that's part of it. It's got to, I guess, unfold as the season goes. Okay, so the True Detective singer, her name is Lyra Lynn.
Okay.
I don't know anything else about her, but that's it.
All right. Let's run out and get her CDs.
I don't want to have to stab myself in the head. Like, seriously, her music is so depressing.
Yeah, it is pretty drony. So Annie and Ray are still talking about how the Vera was in this picture with the state senator, and someone snuck a camera in for the picture, so they think that it was kind of planned blackmail. So they're both lamenting their treatment and their positions, their crap roles that they've got kind of stuck in.
Yeah.
They also learn that, I think I learned this, that the magnificent trio is building here. Ray, Annie, and Paul are going to be this magnificent trio. Because they even start to talk about Paul. Paul's just like them. He's in the same crap situation. He was a hero. Now he's being treated like shit. They're all going to come together as this murderous, vengeful team of destructiveness. I'm so looking forward to that.
All right. So, yeah, I kind of think that that's on the horizon. I think that they're going to team up. But I think what happened is that shootout bonded them.
Yeah. And they have common enemies, which always bonds people, too.
That's right.
So they don't know who the enemy quite is yet, but they know something is pushing them all together.
That's right.
So here's where Ray starts channeling Nick Pizzolatto, and I didn't like this part. Here's what he says, Jamie. He says, "I have this new program. My powers of influence are so meager in this sublunar world of ours. I try to limit the people I can disappoint, and I try to limit the difference between my obligations and somebody else's." What the fuck? Annie even looks at him like, what the fuck? And she just stands up, drinks her whiskey, and gets up to leave.
I don't know. Okay, so this is the thing. You know, when you've got writers who can write the stuff that comes out of Frank's mouth and the stuff that comes out of Jordan's mouth, and then they put that in his mouth, that's on purpose. Like, that was, I think, meant to make us laugh.
Maybe. I mean, it's pretty stilted. But then he does come up with maybe the best line in the whole show. The Droney girl sings a little bit more. What's her name, Droney girl?
Lena Lynn, or yeah, whatever. I don't know. I closed my browser.
Okay. She sings a little bit more, and Ray says the cool line, "It's been really good seeing you. I didn't realize you'd been on my mind." If you ever tell a girl that, that is an awesome line.
That's an awesome line.
"I didn't realize you'd been on my mind. Till I saw you." That's awesome. And that's awesome. That's an awesome line. That's an awesome realization just to have for the guy himself.
Yeah.
"Didn't realize how much you've been on my mind when I saw you." It was like, wow. It made me realize how much you'd been on my mind all the time. I don't know. I love that line.
That's a good line.
All right. So Frank and Jordan regroup. They're watching some old detective movie, right? Some
I don't know if it was a detective movie. I didn't notice.
Or some old cop movie or something.
I liked the scene, you know? And then he says he doesn't care what's on. He doesn't care, you know, what's on the TV, which was awesome. I love that line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Ray and the cool black woman meet outside Tuco's hideout that blew up.
Mm-hmm.
That building looks exactly like Tuco's hideout.
Yeah, right. I didn't even realize, my mind didn't make the differentiation. So for a second, I was like, yeah, that's Tuco's hideout.
So the Magnificent Three are going to get together. Geldof's actions have proven collusion between Vinci and the money, so all the money flowing into Vinci, the money train. And this lady's needs these three. She needs all three of them for different reasons. She needs real people that know what to do, but she needs them on the down low. She needs them off the radar of everybody else.
That's right.
Ray tries to bow out of this, but she says, well, dude, I'll help you get Chad back if you help me with what I need.
That's right. I can guarantee it, basically. That was interesting because, you know, so I don't know if this part's coming up. Is it coming up? Yeah, it's coming up. Never mind. I'll wait. I'll wait till you bring it up.
So I do like Pizzolatto's way he's woven this all together now. He made Frank and he made Ray and Chad so powerful that it was powerful for Ray to do anything to keep Chad in his life.
That's
and
right.
That's how he needs this woman to help him. Okay, so next we go to Frank, and he goes and meets with the Catalyst guy, McCandless.
No, wait. No, but before that scene is over, that lady, I don't know what she is, that cop, the black lady, she tells Ray about the dude that was arrested. And she says, didn't you hear? I thought your ex would have told you that the guy who raped her was arrested and he's going to get a life sentence. And when she walks away, he starts crying. Like, his face collapses and he starts to cry. And it's because he realizes, I think he realizes, he killed the wrong guy.
Yeah, Vince set him up. Yeah, I have this note somewhere else later. I guess that she does say it here. So, yeah, thanks for pointing that out. He thinks he killed the rapist, but he didn't. Vince told him some other guy was the rapist.
Right.
And he killed the wrong guy. And then he told the wife. I think the wife thought he killed the rapist to become her hero, and then she finds out this guy's going to go to jail, and she's like, why did you tell me you killed this guy when you didn't?
Right.
Later on. So it's all messed up. So then at the very end, we see Ray confronting Vince, like, dude, this is not cool. And then they kind of end it there. But let's get to that. We got a couple other scenes before that ending.
Okay.
So Frank goes to get his land. He goes to the McCandless guy at Catalyst and threatens this guy. This is a good plan. He goes to the guy and he says, dude, I'm going to tell everybody about this on-purpose toxic garbage dump by the Archerin company. Then the guy's killed. The owner of the company's killed to get rid of his being able to tell anybody about it. I know what you did here. And he says, you let me back in and give me some land and I'll be cool with this. And the guy says, okay, you give me the hard drive. I don't know why he wants Casper's hard drive. He thinks there's some dirty movies on it or some incriminating things about Casper.
I don't know. Maybe it's got information on it. Maybe it's got some sort of, I don't know, maybe clues that would lead to money or I don't know.
He calls them home movies, like, sarcastically. Like, you know, it's like some crappy porn or child abuse or something.
Well, why would that matter? Because the dude is dead.
Yeah, I don't know. That's what I don't know. I can't figure that out. And they think the Mexicans have the hard drive, which also makes me think that they don't have it.
Oh, I'll bet you that those movies are of the parties.
Oh, yeah, that could be. The incriminating evidence of the big shots.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. That's probably what it is.
Yeah.
But this guy, McCandless, agrees to give Frank 5 parcels of land if he can get the hard drive. So Frank can go right back to being on the up and up if he can just only get this hard drive. He doesn't have to go to this brutal collecting from slumlord slum tenants and running girls through his club and who knows what else he's up to.
Right.
All right, so the Magnificent Three are at work here, Jamie. First we see Ray goes to see Dr. Springfield, and he's reading Carlos Castaneda. Rick Springfield is. And okay. He knows about the human trafficking between Chisani, Kasperi, and for all the girls to trap these dudes. And so I guess this doctor, pretties these girls up and then lets them stay at his house.
Yep.
And he gets his ass kicked by Ray as Ray gets this info from him.
Yep.
Kind of funny, plastic surgeon getting his face beat up.
Well, he's had plenty of plastic surgery, right?
You think Rick Springfield in real life has? Or you think they just made him look like it?
I don't know. Hopefully he doesn't really look like that, because that dude looks really creepy and
yeah,
weird.
Yeah, he did. You're right. He looks Michael Jackson-y almost.
Yeah, it's really weird.
But Rick Springfield is kind of a pretty boy.
That face didn't look pretty. It looks weird.
Yeah, plasticky.
Yeah.
And then we see Annie of the Magnificent Three. She's enlisting her sister to get info by kind of posing again as an escort.
Yep.
And then we see Paul. Paul on the Diamond Trail finds that the other cop looking into the Diamond Trail was Dixon. Dixon's the guy who got shot at Tuco's warehouse.
Okay. Shot in the face.
Yeah, I actually think he got shot in the head. Shot in the face always sounds funnier. It sounds more deviant.
Did you just call me a deviant?
No, it sounds deviant. So, because I thought he said shot in the face, too. Or I thought I said it. I guess I did say it back in the other podcast.
Right.
All right, so then we see Annie and Paul in Guerneville. I think that's supposed to be Guerneville with the guy walking with the cross and the hippie river town. And
yeah, that was so weird.
Have you ever been there?
No.
Yeah, well, you weren't far from it when you were in San Francisco.
Oh, okay.
It's like 50 more miles north.
All right.
So Annie and Paul are up in Guerneville checking out the scene there. And we jump back to Ray and what's the ex-wife's name? Doesn't matter. But she's talking. Okay. And here's where this scene kind of comes to the surface. The rapist wasn't killed by Ray. But in doing so, he unwittingly made himself look like her hero. But it was Vince. It was Frank who was behind all this.
Yeah.
And he didn't know it either. So, and then she also puts on top of that that she's going to tell Chad the truth someday when he's old enough to understand it.
What in the world? I mean, I don't know what's wrong with that woman. She sounds insane to me. Why would you tell your child that?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you're the product of a rape.
Right.
And your fake father then killed the wrong guy. Yeah, it's messy.
Yeah, that's one way to put it.
So and then Frank and Jordan talk again, and they do plan to adopt. Frankie is going to let a little Frankie back in. So that's that. Their results of their communicating is producing like good communication and kind of healing.
Yes, I really like.
So then we jump pretty quick between these scenes. Annie and Paul are up in Guerneville, and they find the closed-down house, and then they find this torture room cabin kind of off in the back.
Yeah.
Birds circling overhead.
Yeah.
And then a scene I didn't understand, more lovey-dovey between Frank and Jordan. It looks like they've moved.
Huh?
Yeah, they've moved because he says this smaller place is cool or whatever, and we didn't need all that room or something.
I don't know, because I thought that wherever they lived before the season started was much grander, and that where they are now is the same place, but
maybe that's it. Maybe that was it.
Okay.
Yeah, you're right. It would have been dumb to have moved between the last 5 minutes that we just saw them. But then he tells Jordan about McCandless and how he could get back in on the up and up real estate deal.
Uh-huh.
If he can only pull off the things he needs to do to get the hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
But then Ray shows up, and there's some new issues on the horizon.
We gotta talk.
Shut the fuck up! Vince is funny when he's walking up to the door.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it was a compelling scene, and it's a cliffhanger. It's a great cliffhanger.
I still don't think this season compares even... It just pales in comparison to season one.
Well, I mean, at least it's looking up, though. This one was bearable to watch.
Yeah, you got to watch season one and then come back with Michelle and I near the end of this so we can all talk about season one compared to season two.
Okay.
Because it'd be interesting to hear your viewpoint of season one and then compare it. It's actually really interesting to hear you talk about season two having not seen season one.
Yeah, I know, because, you know, I listened to our podcast and, you know, I was really kind of up on it, and I still am. Like, I'm really into the writing that's on this show. But, I mean, for you to be so unimpressed, I really feel like I need to watch season one.
You might have one of the most unique perspectives, because I can't imagine many people not having seen season one but are watching season two. Because you can stream right through season one. It's all on Netflix, I think.
Well, it should be on something.
It's not, because it's HBO, right?
Well, yeah. Oh, maybe not. But I'll tell you, I have to have, like, all these channels, because where I moved, they force you to have cable. So, like, now I have, like, a gazillion channels. And as you know, I don't watch television, so it's really bad.
Yeah, not unless I force you to.
Right, exactly.
All right, Jamie. Well, that's it for episode 5, New Order. What is it? New Other Lives. Sorry, Other Lives, episode 5. Next week, it's Church in Ruins. And this has been the West Coast Project podcast for 205 Other Lives for True Detective. So, Jamie, how can people reach you if they want to send you any messages or write into us for the show?
On Twitter, I'm at WordGirly.
And I'm at ScathingTweets. So I'm going to look for you later on in the season. Michelle's back next Sunday. I don't know if she'll have to, we might actually have to need to lean on you for next week, too, because she'll be just coming back.
Oh, that's cool. I'm here for
you. Either way, maybe you can join us, or maybe you can do another one. I don't know how soon she's going to be able to watch these.
All right.
But for sure, let's get back together towards the end of the season and do a kind of comparison of one and two.
Sounds great.
All right, Jamie. Thanks again.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
Bye.
Bye.